Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues produced by the Haug Foundation for Mental Health. The Haug Foundation is part of the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement at the University of Texas at Austin. The podcast is entirely funded by the Haug Foundation and produced by Haug Foundation staff. The views you are about to hear do not reflect those of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hello and welcome to Into the Fold. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we are talking about COVID-19 and older adults. There's no one-size-fits-all blueprint for creating mental health and well-being. But a good measuring stick is whether older people have the same ability as everyone else to thrive in communities that support their mental health and well-being. Indeed, with record numbers of Americans now living to age 90 and older, our ability to provide for the mental as well as physical health of this population has to be strengthened if we are to create healthy communities now and in the future. And of course, with COVID-19 now putting unprecedented stress on our already overburdened systems of support for older people, this need has reached a critical level. Joining us today is Carly Bassett, a licensed clinical social worker based here in Austin, Texas. This is her second appearance on the podcast. She specializes in mental health care for older adults. She is joining us via Zoom, as you may guess. Carly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back again.
What is the biggest shift that you have seen among your clients since COVID-19 seized everybody's attention?
Yes. Well, I will say working with an older adult population, they are experiencing, I believe, what most of us are, which is an increase in anxiety. I think we see increases in anxiety and depression right now, but particularly anxiety. I think as we continue to go into this state of just not knowing how long it's going to last and you know, what our lives are going to be like for an older adult population, that just, you know, touches on the anxiety, the lack of control, and the unknowns.
In the previous podcast you and I did, you had quite a bit to say about, you know, the importance of maintaining social connections for older adults. Is there a sense among older adults that more than anyone else, they're being forced into a choice between their mental and physical health right now?
Yes, I would say that's true. I think, you know, on an individual basis, I think people are having to make, so I don't know if forced is the right word necessarily, but some people feel compelled to make strong decisions for their own physical health that I think may be detrimental to their mental health. You know, we see clients who just even among their family members have differences of opinion about isolating, what they should or shouldn't be doing. And so I think now more than ever, people are challenged to sort of really think about what does isolation mean? What are the risks? Is it worth risking physical health to get out and to take some chances to have connection and interaction with other people?
A lot of your work with clients focuses on those who have experienced loss.
Yes.
Can you illustrate for us how COVID-19 is complicating your work and the normal grieving process for those that you work with?
Yes, and I will say issues around grief and loss are so hard right now for people. I think about two different groups. So in an older adult population, I'm working with people who maybe have experienced the loss of a spouse prior to the pandemic, and noticing that what the pandemic has forced them to do is kind of really put a halt on a lot of the momentum and the progress that had been made towards maybe re-entry into the community or reestablishing routines. And so for a lot of people, I think it's forced them to kind of take a couple steps back in their progress. And also, I think the additional challenge for people with loss is now they are stuck inside in their homes. I think about, you know, widows and widowers who are literally sitting in their house, their empty house, all alone, you know, surrounded by a lifetime of memories and pictures and items. And it can feel like torture, because normally we would encourage them to get out and break up their day and distract themselves really with other things. And for a lot of people, that's literally not possible. So that can add another element of complication to their grieving process. The other part, I think about people who have experienced loss in the pandemic. They are unable to really enjoy what we typically do in terms of rights in our society and gathering and having memorials and being able to do that real grief work with other people. So they've been deprived of those opportunities. And I think that just really puts a strain on the ability to do the grief work in a way that we would, you know, traditionally do it in our culture.
And without, you know, jeopardizing, you know, client confidentiality, I was wondering, maybe you have like any like sort of firsthand testimonials that you could paraphrase, you know, from your clients about what it is that they're dealing with emotionally.
Yes. So, you know, what I'm hearing from people emotionally is feeling stuck, feeling hopeless, feeling lonely. And I think the sense of, like I mentioned before, not being able to do anything. You know, a lot of what people want is something to do, something to feel better, something to help. I have a client who lost his spouse maybe 4 or 5 months before the pandemic and had done remarkable work in kind of facing his grief and kind of reinventing his own identity and sense of worth. And part of that loss was a loss of income for him when his wife died. And one of the things that he had been working on was getting back out into the community and finding some work that he could do. And it was beautiful because it allowed him to make some extra money, support himself, reduce anxiety because the financial insecurity was not there anymore. And it was really just great in terms of his grief experience. And when the pandemic hit, the opportunity to work outside the house was gone. The opportunity to interact with others was gone. And so it really felt like it was just really destructive. And in working with him now, there aren't those options. It's taken away a lot of those. So my work now is really just sort of holding space for the emotion and trying to contain that. But a lot of the sort of practical solutions that people want just aren't there anymore.
You are a telehealth provider, and you know, we're all familiar with the stereotypes about older people and their openness to technology, their competence with it. But setting that aside, to what extent have the folks who you have worked with been struggling to adapt to the world of Zoom and so forth, and what solutions have you been able to come up with to bridge that gap?
Great question. That was one of my biggest fears in kind of transferring over to a telehealth platform and thinking about older adults and some of the challenges that are presented there. I will say it ranges. I find a lot of people who I thought would struggle or be resistant have actually done really well. I credit that to telemedicine. I think a lot of the clients who have physicians who are doing telemedicine visits have sort of normalized that experience for clients. So that's been helpful. Another element is sort of in this pandemic, there's kind of been a relaxing of some of the privacy and HIPAA rules around technology, which has allowed a little more freedom to adapt. So for an older adult who maybe is used to FaceTiming a grandchild because they have an iPhone, I'm able to offer to meet them on FaceTime as opposed to maybe the normal sort of HIPAA compliant service that I use. So it's really, it's been nice to have some flexibility to work with what the clients have and already are comfortable with using. But that being said, you know, sometimes I'll spend 45 minutes, you know, having a session with someone's forehead, and that's okay. You know, we accept what we have, and if it's not perfect, that's okay. I think it's more important that we have a connection, even if it's not perfect, you know, audio or visually.
As easy as it is for many people to put the elderly out of mind, it's worth remembering that in a lot of ways, nursing homes, assisted living facilities have been ground zero for the pandemic and the human toll that it is having. Can you give us a sense of what it is that these places are experiencing?
From, you know, I would say for the residents and the people that live there, it's scary. You know, for people that are cognitively intact and aware, they're watching the news all day. It's not a secret that they are in a high-risk environment. A lot of the practices, you know, within these facilities and communities are heightened. So you're seeing a reduction in, you know, frequency of contacts and visitors and exchange, you know, among staff and residents. I think from a mental health perspective of thinking about all these sort of extras that help make the quality of life higher in those environments are often the first things to go. You know, an example is a lot of facilities have people come in and sing and do activities. And so those things are gone. They've really had to reduce any external support coming in. And I think everybody feels that. And like I said earlier, that just raises everybody's anxiety. And coupled with, I think the question everybody has, when is this gonna end? When is this going to go back to normal? And nobody has an answer to that, but it's not stopping us from still seeking answers from management, from the administration, and nobody knows. And that doesn't feel good for anybody.
So are there any, stories or examples that, you know, that illustrate whether these are things that you've implemented yourself or not? Just ways of easing the burden for older adults that might, you know, that might give a more positive picture, or at least point the way toward what is possible.
Possible in terms of mental health, increasing outcomes for mental health?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think collectively we all have to be creative. And we have to be aware. And so, one of the things I've tried to do for clients who have maybe not felt comfortable coming onto teletherapy or resistant is figuring out ways to connect to them, even if it's not traditional therapy, but ways to let them know, I still care about you, I still see you, I still think about you. And I think there's easy ways to do that. Sending text messages, sending cards in the mail, things that may be relaxing, sort of the typical clinical boundaries, are really important right now. And I think we can all do that. We can think about our neighbor, we can think about maybe a grandparent in another state, and figure out ways to continue to reach out. Even if they don't have access to technology, there's ways we can make an effort to connect to them. And so I think part of it is you know, being mindful that although older people, especially in facilities, they're not visible, they're not seen, you know, in the news and the media, but they're still there. And collectively, we have to remember that.
Is there anything else that has been top of mind for you since all of this started that you really would like to get across to our listeners about this issue?
Well, I feel like, you know, mental health in older adults is, of course, an important issue, and it is of mine, and I think it is in our community now more so than ever, as we face, you know, meeting the needs of an already isolated population. I think we are tasked now with figuring out, as we go forward, how can our system change to meet the ongoing needs of people who are homebound or who don't have access to community services. One of the hopeful things that I feel like may come out of this would be ongoing access and benefits to teletherapy. Prior to the pandemic, Medicare did not cover teletherapy for most people unless they were in rural communities. And so I think what this hopefully will teach us is that regardless of whether, you know, we're back to business as usual, we still need to open opportunities and create access for people to utilize mental health services in a variety of ways. Removing those barriers, you know, thinking about older adults who might have a cold or not feel well and not be able to get out to seek support, they can still access those things virtually. And so that helps everybody. I think the other part of this is also considering, how do we reach people who are isolated, since people are not engaging in community services and out, you know, in our agencies? I fear that those people won't be seen, they won't be assessed as well. So we might have more people, you know, fall off the radar who need services. So we really have to figure out a way to continue to provide access and also continue to find the people who, you know, don't know how to access these entry points for services.
Okay, well, things are serious, but people surprise you with how they deal with things and how they adapt. And older adults are no exception. So thank you, Carly, for taking the time for the second time to come on our show to talk to our listeners and sharing your expertise with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And that brings us to the conclusion of this episode. As I said in the intro, this is Carly's second appearance on the podcast. I've included a link to episode 81, Well-Being at Every Age, What Older People Can Teach Us, as well as links to other resources on this topic. Once again, this list is not to be hoarded. Please share it with everyone you can think of. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, So it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience and well-being. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or TuneIn. Thank you very much.